Your dog wants chicken and cheese, and our next guest wants you to give it to him. You know, if they behave, as a little bit of a reward, as a way to say, do it again, good dog, great dog, the best dogs. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest this hour is George Malara, owner of Divine Canine in Madison, a professional dog trainer who can help translate those barks and sometimes bites into what your dog is trying to tell you. And we invite you to our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can send us an email to talk@wpr.org. And George, welcome back.
Lee, thanks for having me, bud. How you been?
I am excited to have you because I see dogs in the neighborhood all the time, and I love each and every one of them. I know I'm not, it's not my place to go out and let them know that, but I do express that often, and I see a lot of great dog owners out there, and I see a lot of folks who would love to be better at, you know, knowing their dog and speaking with their dog.
Totally. Just on the drive over today, I saw, like, it warms my heart when I see somebody like, there was a dog sitting by on the street, on the sidewalk, and the owner asked him to sit and gave him a couple treats. Another dog passed, and it's just like warmed the cockles of my heart, you know, like just to see people doing that sort of stuff, making even something as simple as that, but they're just connecting with their dogs and spending time with them. It's so lovely.
This is the way the world should work. We could
totally.
Take a page or two out
Absolutely.
Of treats and sitting at the right time and letting folks pass by peacefully.
Absolutely. and stay out of people's business.
We've already got a call, so let's get right to it. And we'll start with Mary in New London today. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Hi, Mary.
I have a neutered male Shiba Inu mix. He is either 6 or 8 years old. He is great behaviorally, except with puppies at the dog park. Any dog that is under a year old, he takes it upon himself to go after that dog, grab its neck, and pin it to the ground. And he's never, like, been aggressive, so to speak. But it makes me uncomfortable, and it, of course, makes everyone else at the dog park uncomfortable when he does that.
I love how you were able to pinpoint dogs under a year, because that's a truly magical number in the development of dogs. So what happens when dogs are going into adolescence, and this is a nice little way to discuss age of dog. So puppies born, and then they're puppies from birth up until about 4 or 5 months old. 4 or 5 months old, they enter into adolescence, depending on the size. Bigger dogs will enter into adolescence a little bit later in life, smaller dogs a little sooner. But on average, your average 40 to 60 pound dog, 4 to 5 months, they're entering into adolescence. Now, at this age, they, up until then, they have this little badge. Puppies have a badge, and they get to say, like, I'm going to jump up and bite your face. I'm going to act inappropriately. Here's my badge. I have permission to do so. But at a certain age, right when they hit adolescence, they have this huge testosterone spike because they're going into a big portion of their growth.
Puberty.
Yeah, totally. Doggy adolescence, doggy puberty. So they have this huge testosterone spike. And then what happens is other dogs smell that dog and go, oh, you reek of dog. You are no longer a puppy. Your puppy license has been revoked. You are to be tried as an adult. So these little dogs that really aren't doing anything necessarily wrong per se, mm-hmm. they reek like an adult dog, and other dogs will overcorrect those dogs. It's like those young adolescent dogs have a kick me sign on them. And it's like, you know, they're getting bullied and they're getting picked on. Now, part of this is the responsibility of the young dog owner to know that this is going on, but a lot of people don't know this. They just start to see their dog getting attacked at the dog park. The nice thing about your Shiba is that he's delivering what sounds like an appropriate correction, but it's also not his job to do so. So a couple things I'd work on with him. And just to mention, too, like with that testosterone spike, this has less to do with sexuality and making puppies. It has more to do with building a dog. So ligaments, tendons, bones, like they're growing at this age. Think of any teenage kid that's growing and they have these growth spurts and they start to smell a little funny and they start to have acne and they start to have hair in places. So with our dogs, it's similar to that. Now, It's not your dog's job to correct these dogs. So a couple things I would work on at the park is, one, if you can visually identify that there's a young dog in the vicinity, is working on a really, really great recall. So anytime your dog's off and about, Mary, what's your dog's name?
His name is Gus.
Gus. So you're going to work on a really good, strong recall. And the recall, I like to do it, I'd start at home, just working on name recognition in the house. You can ping pong him between family members. Just say his name. When he comes running, grab his collar. Very important. First, you grab his collar and then deliver a bunch of treats. And then ping pong him to the next person, and he's going to be running. This will carry over to the dog park. If you try to practice this at the dog park, it might be too intense, and there might be too many distractions. So you want to practice in a distraction-free zone so you can really lay down the foundation and then try it at the dog park. So if you notice that there's a youngish dog around, that's when you're going to practice calling Gus. When Gus comes over, you grab his collar, put him on leash, and quickly scurry by the young dog, create some distance, and then let him off leash again.
So you just start teaching him that he is not he's not the boss, not his place to correct.
He doesn't need to be the aide on the playground. It's not his job to raise that puppy.
Good luck with Gus, Mary, and thank you for calling. When you're saying recall, is it come Gus? Is it Gus come here? Is there a specific command you got to be?
Whatever. I with my dogs, I have like it's more contextual. If my dog is next to me and I say Dolly, she looks at me for information. If my dog is way over there and I say Dolly, it means get over here.
Okay. So it's just the name.
I say name, but a lot of people like to talk, so they like to say come, or mostly it's come. So we call the dog over, but just whatever you use, you want to use the cues consistently, followed by that collar grab. What happens a lot is that the dog will approach and they'll stop like 5 feet away because they know you're going to grab that collar. You know, the top three reasons we grab our dog's collar: they're in trouble, and it's time to leave the park. So when we go to reach for that collar, they're like, not yet, and they take off. So by having him understand that collar grab is part of the behavior of coming, and then you deliver treats, it's just going to be commonplace for them.
Mary, let us know how Gus does at the park after some recall exercises, and I hope it all goes well. Thank you for calling. We'll go to Bill and Barnes next. Bill, hi.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have two golden retrievers, one 5 years old and one 5 months old, and they get along great. They romp and play and wrestle all over the house, and then they rest, and then they do it again. And I walked them on a extendable leash, retractable, but usually about 6 feet at a time. And when they get excited about maybe nothing that I perceive, or someone greeting them, or a squirrel in a tree, they grab each other's leashes and roll themselves into a ball of fur. And usually I got one leg in the mix, and it's really hard to get it disentangled. And other than the comic interlude, I don't know how to make them stop this. You know, the otherwise playful wrestling, they can't do it. Anyway, help me.
Oh, yes. Thank you for calling, Bill. So number one is trying to train both of them at the same time is going to be very, very difficult. And I'd probably, I'm guessing that your older dog walks more politely on leash than your 5-month-old. 5-month-old dogs tend to walk like one of those little white butterflies, just all over the place. So I double down on working with your younger dog, and with a treat pouch in hand full of yummy, yummy treats, anytime you encounter something that would trigger them to get quote unquote reactive or excited, you're going to pair that with food. So like he sees a cat, you know, a stray cat on the street, or a bunny, or a squirrel, or a person, you're going to ask him to, just sit or something and give him some treats. Now, one of the big things that I train my clients' dogs to do is arousal training. So arousal training is really important because a lot of times people want to, when a dog is really aroused is when they're going to listen the least. Mm-hmm. But it's when we want them to listen the most. So it's really important that we introduce arousal training to a dog so they know what that feels like. And what that looks like in training is you go through something basic like a sit or a down or preferably a stay, and you work on games that are going to have a lot of impulse control. leaving some food on the ground or something that where they have to focus. Now, when we train something new, you want it to be done in a sterile environment that's conducive to learning. So they learn it in a nice environment. And then once they understand the behavior pretty darn well, that's when you introduce tug and play. I call this synthetic arousal. Hmm. It's synthetic because I'm creating it, but mm-hmm. it's arousal. I tug, slappy face, wrestle, get the dog all lathered up. And then I go, okay, now that you're nuttier than squirrel poop, can you still think? And then I bring them right back to the focus game. Now, in the beginning, dogs will falter and they're going to mess up in the beginning. But over time, they're able to flip the switch from aroused to focused, aroused to focused. So this will carry out into the street. When they get aroused, they'll be more responsive to their name. They'll be more responsive to a cue like sit or down, as opposed to you just trying to bark it at them when they're high as a kite trying to get the bunny or the squirrel.
Bill said he didn't really recognize sometimes what would rile them up.
Oh, Bill, you said like a person, bunny, squirrel. There was a trigger of some sort. But if there's nothing, now when we talk about equipment too, that brings me to the equipment part. Yeah. Those retractable leashes are very, very difficult to manage. When you have to take up the slack, you have to sort of reel them in like a fish. You're like taking up the slack, locking it, and then trying to gather more of the leash into the mechanism. So walking them just on 6-foot leashes can be really, really helpful and prevent them from not only getting tangled, but possibly preventing injury.
Do dogs get confused on a retractable leash? Do they?
You know, verdict's out. You know, verdict is hazy there, because some dogs will think that there's another 2 feet of leash in there and they keep trying to pull. And I think it breaks the connectivity or the Bluetooth connectivity between you and your dog. They're way up ahead. And then when you need them, they're not reliable enough to come close. So I'm not a fan of those retractable leashes for safety reasons, first and foremost, and then secondarily for training purposes. I much rather have like a 10, 20 static line that I know how to control.
So arousal training.
Arousal training, yeah.
Do this in an isolated environment before you take the walk, and they're not going to be good at it at first.
Correct.
They're going to fail.
Right.
But
how do you get to Carnegie Hall?
Well, you practice. I don't know. I haven't been yet, George, but I'll tell you when I get there. Bill, I hope that helps, and good luck with your golden retrievers. Thank you for calling. George Malara is our guest, owner of Divine Canine in Madison, a professional dog trainer who will help your dog today at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. Kind of curious what it's like to be a dog. I imagine that our senses are a little bit different than what I would perceive my senses are being. And I specifically think about how they are out there smelling everything. Like a good walk is some great smells.
Smell is insane. Like it is crazy how well dogs smell. I don't know if you're familiar with Mark Rober. Mark Rober is an ex-NASA engineer, worked on the Curiosity rover, and then he came up with Crunch Labs. And he does these little packages you can get for your kids, little engineering packages where they build a little something that has to do with engineering, learn a lesson. So on his YouTube channel, he has he just goes crazy with engineering. So he made like a squirrel obstacle course or whatever. But one of the episodes he had was he hired a handler dog team of search and rescue. And this woman was talking about, the dog and how the dog's smell works. And one of the things she said that blew me away was there could be a room of, say, 4 or 5 people, and everybody gets a piece of paper towel and they wipe it on themselves. Uh-huh. One of those people leaves, and then you allow the dog to sniff the paper towel. The dog says, oh, that smell, that's that person. That smell is that person. That smell is that person. That smell, I don't see him here. That's who I'm looking for. So it's deductive reasoning. It's wild.
You don't think of dogs as having like, Sherlock Holmes style.
And so Mark Rober, he created this thing where he put on like one of those like sterile, like Tyvek suits and like to protect the smell. And then along the way, he had booby traps for the dog. Like one of them, he had like a remote control car that was spraying like deer urine or something, like just to throw the dog off the scent. And then the only place, so there was like a couple of those little booby traps. The only place the dog got thrown off for about 4 or 5 minutes was he had a giant industrial fan that he ran past and it blew all the scent particles in one direction. And then the dog got lost for like 4 or 5 minutes and then picked up the smell and then found him.
Well, it's like the hounds in the movies, though, right?
Totally.
They can figure out, or you give them a piece of clothing and send them on their way and they can hunt it down. But that just kind of, I mean, it gives you an idea of how they perceive the world differently, that it's not, they've got sight, right? They can see, but that's not what they use to find their way.
And the sense of smell is just so incredible because they're able to like decode really complex scents, and it requires such intense concentration. And it's like you're giving your dog a job. Like these canine nose work classes and these, like, they're so important for dogs to sniff. That's why I had a client once where he came to me and he said, "Oh God, George, you know, this dog, he's just, you know, he stops and he sniffs." And I go, "Well, how long is he sniffing?" He's like 20, 30 seconds, for like each tree. And I'm like a whole 20, 30 seconds? Like, that's not a long time. and that's like reading the paper and sending P-mail, right? They're gathering information. And all of that is important for a dog to do. Remember that they've been at home all day. When you take them for a walk, it's so important to let them sniff more than you think you should.
So those dog, when you take your dog for a walk, it doesn't have to be an aerobic exercise. It's more rewarding if it is a nasal exercise.
Sometimes the nasal exercise is more aerobic than the actual physical. Like, you can take any average dog. Let's say you have a 4-year-old dog, and you walk it for 2 miles, brisk walk. That's like Lance Armstrong riding his bike to the corner store to get a quart of milk. Right? That's not going to tire a dog out. Where would you think that? But you allow a dog to sniff, and you go to a local park, you put your dog on a long line, and you scatter some treats in the grass, and they have to sniff and like a little truffle pig walking back and forth looking for their vittles, right? That's what's going to get them nice and tired.
And that would be, that's an adventure, right?
Yeah.
That is an obstacle course, an adventure.
The word they use is sniffari.
A sniffari.
That's
who
a
are
big,
these people coming up loaded, with these words?
It's the new phrase like for sniffing. And I love that this is coming to head here, because the sniffing is just so important for dogs. It can also really help them a lot with calming their nervous system.
Oh.
Engaging the nose activates the parasympathetic nervous system, and it can shift a dog into a more relaxed state.
I see a lot of dogs who have anxiety, or a lot of dog owners who are worried about their dog's anxiety level. And there is a connection there between that and their
Absolutely.
Nose?
Absolutely. Any of my anxious, fearful dogs, I first thing we do, and the clients are like, "Well, I want to get them over the fear." Mm-hmm. And I go, "Yeah, we're going to do sniff work." Because that builds confidence. Like when they find the treat in the box, or they find like all these, like they do investigating, it's helping regulate them. Because dogs have dopamine and they have serotonin,
sure.
They have all the chemicals, and when they're able to be successful that way, it just helps regulate them. It just brings them down. It just brings them down a bit.
Let's go back to your calls now at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org for our guest George Millar, professional dog trainer. We'll go to Lisa in Middleton next. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, George.
Hi, Lisa.
I have a Wheaton Terrier. I got her from a breeder when she was a puppy during COVID. So she's 6 years old. She's always had some like skittish qualities to her, like issues with thresholds, or especially people with baseball hats and sunglasses on. And some of that stuff we've worked through. But one of my big concerns is she will meet somebody and she'll like them and get along with them. It, you know, takes a little bit to warm up. And then the next time they come to the house, it's like a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they like leave the house for a little bit and they come back, it's like, oh, there's a different person. So it's almost like she has this weird amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's typical, if there's a way that I can work with her so she, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite things about Wheatons, it's more of a phrase or a saying, life is merrier with a Wheaton Terrier. They're like court jesters. They're so much fun. So when we talk about like fear of people, I have a technique that I use, and it's called transfer of value. So I want you to think, what's your dog's name, by the way?
Her name is Josie.
Josie. So Josie, transfer of value. And here's how it works. I want you to imagine open door policy people that could walk in your home and she would be happy to see them, like run up to them, jump on them and try to lick their face. So what we do is we have those people. I want you to think of that as like the center bullseye on a dartboard. Those are the people you're going to play a couple games with. The first game I play with these dogs is called treat, treat, toss. One of the biggest mistakes I see people make with fearful dogs is like, if Lee, you were coming over my house and I said, okay, my dog's scared of people. Here's some treats. Mm-hmm. You give the dog all the treats and then the dog looks up and goes, oh my God, a stranger. Woo, 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 woo. They start to bark and get upset. Instead, we do treat, treat, toss. That's where you would give my dog two or three treats and then you take the third or fourth treat and you throw it way behind them. So they have to run and go get that treat. When we're scared of something, what do we want? Distance.
Sure.
Space. So by tossing the treat, you're giving the dog distance. And then at the same time, their brain is switching from stranger danger to food acquisition. Then what does the dog have to do to get more food?
Come back.
Approach.
Yeah.
So we're reinforcing the dog approaching. And then we do treat, treat, toss again, treat, treat, toss again. So with that game, you have everybody that Josie knows play this game that she loves. Then we have acquaintances, which is the next ring on the bullseye, right? The 50. That's people that she's met a handful of times. She might know them. She warms up a little quicker, but she's still a little uncertain. Now, when these people play treat, treat, toss, she's going to go, wait a second. How do you know this game? Only my loved ones know this game. You must be in the club. So I love CIA operative movies like Jason Bourne, like that sort. So Lee and I are CIA ops, and we're meeting on an operation in Paris, France. And Lee's there with his bag of groceries with a baguette hanging out.
Nice.
And I see him. He's my contact. I walk over and I say, the baguettes in France are delicious. And he says, but I prefer the croissants. I know he's my guy. He had the secret password. And these games turn into the secret password.
Treat transference, is that what you call it?
No, transfer of value.
Transfer of value.
We're transferring the value of the people that she knows and loves to new people, new-ish people, and then we introduce strangers. But at that point, she's played all these games. Now, the other game I love to teach is a hand target. Does Josie know how to do a hand target or a touch or a boop?
She knows how to do paw, like give me your paw.
But she doesn't know how to boop her nose to your hand?
Well, she will for attention if she wants to be pet.
No, this is a deliberate behavior. So you can just jump on YouTube and type in hand target or touch, and you'll have 100 videos pop up. But essentially what we do is we teach the dog how to hand target. And this is, again, touching a stranger's hand, but first her loved ones. So we start by teaching the hand target. You teach it to her. Then with family members. So if Lee, let's say the three of us were sitting in a room, you would say touch. And you'd point to me and I'd put my hand out. Josie looks for the hand, goes and touches my hand, comes back to you for the food. So this is sort of like the treat, treat, toss, mm-hmm. but now she has to engage the person. But it's on her own will. And then she comes back to you for the treat. So by playing these little games where she has to interact in a way with people, it's teaching her that people are safe and she can do it on her own terms. We're not forcing a dog into a situation. We're not forcing them into a place where they're uncomfortable, because the moment we do that, that's where fear settles in, and then that's where nips and bites can occur.
I've only got about a minute here, but what about Lisa's concern that Josie's got amnesia?
It's not amnesia. It's just there's not enough pattern. There's not enough repetition.
I don't know you well enough yet.
Correct.
I met you a little bit.
I met you once. Once is not a pattern. So if that person came over 4, 5, 6 times and they came with food every time, she would start to remember that person.
A little treat, treat, toss.
Yeah.
After all your loved ones have done treat, treat, toss.
Correct.
And then you get the transfer of value to the strangers. And all of a sudden, you're not so much of a stranger anymore.
And then she's like, oh, we're having guests?
That means I'm having treats.
Right.
Let's eat. George Malara, our guest. He is a professional dog trainer. Lisa, thank you so much for the call. Let us us know how Josie does with visitors. George is the owner of Divine Canine in Madison, answering your questions this hour at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News. What is your dog trying to tell you? And it isn't anything that a treat or two wouldn't help figure out. Our guest is professional dog trainer George Malari. He's the owner of Divine Canine in Madison, and he's answering your puppy questions today and taking your dog on a sniffari. New term for me that I just learned. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk at WPR.org. And George, before we get to the next caller, we were also talking about dog anxiety. And I guess I want to know what an anxious dog looks like. What are the signs that the dog is having anxiety and that it probably should be addressed?
Well, there's a lot of different types of anxiety, but generally I see fear. Mm. And fear is driven by the unknown. So there was a letter from a veterinarian that stated, like, once a puppy has their first round of vaccines, and his argument was that when the puppy's drinking milk from mom, that they're getting colostrum, mm-hmm. and that has antibodies in it, that they should be out in public meeting things and not being cavalier and going to a dog park or going to places where they could get sick, but starting to take them places to explore the world. And when I have a puppy client, anytime I have a puppy, we go out and we explore the world. And when we see something scary and the puppy's like, I don't know about that, give them a hot dog. And they're like, oh, I like cement mixers. I like scaffolding. I like tall people. I like short people. I like everybody. So we start pairing the world with food, yeah. so that that's the currency that we pay them to understand that everything's okay. Now, I love that you brought that up. One big misconception around fear and anxiety is, let's say, thunder phobia or firework yes. phobia. Right, dogs totally freaked out about fireworks or thunderstorms. Well, a lot of people will say, well, you shouldn't coddle the dog. Right, you shouldn't pet them and call them because then you're reinforcing the fear.
Hmm.
Hogwash. Hogwash. You cannot reinforce an emotion.
Interesting.
So here's why I love this debunk, because if my dog was fearful of thunderstorms
yeah.
and the thunderstorm was coming, first they smell that the air smells different, the barometric pressure, the static, everything coming that comes with the storm. It's this little buildup. Now, if my dog's trembling on the couch and I sit next to them and I snuggle them and their breathing changes and they stop panting and they relax and their body's not as stiff and tight, shouldn't my hugging and coddling them make it worse?
Yeah.
But it's making it better.
Yeah.
So hug your dogs if they're scared. It's okay.
I don't know that I could resist.
Right. Right. I'm a dirty hippie. If it cries, if it cries, you pick it up.
Just good advice from our dirty hippie, George Millar.
Love your dogs.
Love your dogs no matter what.
Right.
Because here's the thing about dogs. They'll love you no matter what, but that's no excuse not to love them back.
Correct.
Yeah. They are a constant lesson in selfless giving, love, and loyalty.
And they live in the moment. You know, like, oh. I'm hungry right now. I'm scared right now. I'm happy right now. And, you know, people always, you know, the complaint I get a lot is like, oh my God, my dog jumps all over me when I get home. I go, yeah, that dog's been at the house all
cooped
day.
Cooped up all
yeah.
day.
And you're like, you're the best part about their day.
And because they live in the moment, they're not sitting back there dreading the rest of the
right.
day before that. They're right there with you right now and couldn't be happier about
it. They're present and they're in the moment.
Well, there's another lesson we can take from dogs.
Absolutely.
Because the present really is all that exists. The past is our recollection, our imagination, and the future is our projection, also our imagination. So we should be in the present because that is what is real.
Love it. Love it.
Well, you took me down that hippie path.
I did.
George.
Come on.
So I just followed where
peace,
you went.
Peace, love, and granola.
And puppies. Let's go to Kay in La Crosse next. Kay, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I really love my dog, too.
Good.
But he is an adopted shepherd. And when I adopted him, I had a border collie. And so he was not reactive when I adopted him. But it was at the end of the pandemic, so he's about three now, and the shelter wasn't having any visitors, and he came by transport from Tulsa up here, and he's reactive to other dogs. He's reactive to people who walk by the car, because the car is his. He's reactive to visitors. And I've had him to two local trainers and two online trainers. And one of them actually made him much worse.
Oh.
And he hasn't really gotten better. And I still really like him, but he's so different than any dog I've ever had. My border collie has since passed on. And I really would just love for him to be able to walk on a trail and just get past another dog.
How old is he?
It's about three now.
Okay.
I don't know what to do.
So the trainer, and I'm just shooting from the hip here, but the trainer that made it worse, were they using an electric shock collar?
No.
Okay. Oh, that's
they
good.
Would just,
good.
Introduce him to other dogs and say, let him bark it out.
Oh,
bark it out.
Yikes. Yeah. So here's my remedy. The way I talk about reactivity in dogs is that he's uncomfortable. There was a funny New York Times piece where they had like the, how many of this breed does it take to change a light bulb? And the German Shepherd was, first, I make sure the perimeter's secure. So when we have a breed specific traits, right? German Shepherds or Shepherds can be quite guardy about what's going on. They're very alert. One of the things that I talk about is, again, pairing. So what we do is we want to punish the bad behavior of barking. But our dog's already telling us that they're uncomfortable. So it might seem counterintuitive, but this is where we feed food. So the first step here is classical conditioning. So, Kay, are you retired? What do you do for work?
Tired right now. I was a nurse, and he's like my fifth shepherd in my life, or shepherd mix.
Mm-hmm.
My whole life, and I've never encountered this.
So I'm going to use Lee as an example here.
Good.
So Lee, you work in this beautiful office with all these wonderful people. But let's say there's somebody here that you absolutely despise, right? That you'd like to choke him a little, maybe give him a couple smacks, right? You despise this person. Let's say this person's name is Larry.
This is taking a dark turn.
Follow me on this one. So let's say this person's name's Larry, right? Now imagine I cast a Harry Potter spell on you.
Uh-huh.
You already don't like Larry. He heats up his fish in the microwave.
I love Larry.
I know you do. Fine, George. You work with a George.
George.
That George.
Oh, I want to strangle that George.
He heats up his fish in the microwave. Different
that
political
guy.
View.
Oh, right. Dirty hippie.
So I cast a Harry Potter spell on you. And this one says, every time you see George in the office in passing, you're going to get the most violent heartburn you've ever had.
Oh.
Is that going to make your relationship to me better or worse?
I'm not going to like you any more than I don't like you already.
So, but this is what we do to our dogs. We're walking down the street. Our dogs are barking at another dog. And then we jerk on the leash. And we say, hey, knock it off. No, don't do that.
I hate this.
Right? So the dog's like, oh, my God, I thought I didn't like dogs. Yeah. But this guy flies off the handle when there's dogs around.
And I got to pay the price for it.
So now I take away that Harry Potter spell. I cast another one on you.
What's this one?
This one says, every time you see George in the office, you're going to get a warm pop in your pocket, and there'll be a $100 bill.
$100?
Where the heck is George?
I love George.
Right.
I want to see George. Let's go find George.
As counterintuitive as it seems to pay when the dog is reacting, you're not paying them because they're barking. You're paying them because the other dog exists. So they start to build an association. So the first part here is Pavlovian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pavlov sits on this shoulder here. So in the beginning, we're just feeding anytime they see a dog. And now the most important takeaway from all of this is that it is key that you wait until your dog sees the other dog.
It's not that the treat creates the dog creates the treat.
Correct.
There needs to be a cause effect that your dog can...
Exactly right.
Okay.
Now, people tend to do three things when they're on their walk with a reactive dog. Number one.
they wind up on the leash in preparation for the tugging.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, they nervously talk to the dog. Oh, okay, be a good dog. You can do it. Or three, they use food as a distraction. Don't look over there. Look over here. And they sort of get the dog away from.
Oh my gosh, I'm guilty of two of those three.
So, but that's classical conditioning as well. And it doesn't take the dog long to learn that anytime their human does one of those three things, there's a dog here somewhere.
So it puts them on alert. It makes them
so
ready.
Just by waiting for your dog to see the other dog, that's when you pay. Good boy. And then you could do all three of those things.
So they're gonna react. They're gonna react in a barky.
And sometimes even in that moment where they just sort of target the dog with their eyes,
treats.
That's when we start feeding. Good boy. Do you see the puppy? What a good dog. And then their attention's on us over time. So the first part's Pavlov.
Yeah.
Second part is my friend B.F. Skinner. Operant conditioning. So then what happens, there's this magical little moment where my reactive dog sees the other dog,
yep,
and then turns to me and goes, hey, pay up, there's another one. And the barking subsides because we've built a positive association. And the beauty of this is that we're changing what's called a CER, the conditioned, learned, emotional response. So now dogs aren't a trigger. They're still a trigger, but they're triggering a better response, which is food.
And what about my response, though, where I'm tensing up and I'm starting to talk about, you know, be good.
That matters, but not as much as people think.
Okay.
If you can fake it till you make it, just happy talk and feed. And make sure that you're using super high value treats,
too. I should get some treats for myself, so I'm not.
You know, I've had clients where I'm like, you know, before you go for a walk, have a glass of wine or just suck on a lolly, you know, like something that's going to just keep. Don't forget to breathe. Right, just keep moving forward.
I like this idea, like, you know, chicken and cheese in one, hot dogs in one pocket, and then M&Ms in the other. And then before I get all riled up, I pop an M&M, and then
eat the wrong bag. Don't eat from the wrong.
Nothing
bag.
Wrong with a hot dog and some cheese. You just don't want to feed the M&Ms to the dog.
Correct.
That's the way to go. Kay, I thank you for sharing your story, and I hope that works.
Is it possible to get Kay's information? I'd love to just talk to her a little longer about this offline.
Kay, hang on the line here, and we'll get your phone number if you are good with that to George, and he can follow up with you and your adopted German Shepherd, and we'll make sure we do some good there. So thanks again. Let's put Kay on hold, and then we'll go to Corey in Dodgeville next. Corey, hi.
Hi, Ray. I'm calling about my sweet dog. She's a rescue. I've had her for 6 weeks. She just turned one. And I run a home, I run a business out of my home. It's a nursery, plants, not people. And I have staff, regular staff. Now, the challenge we're having is my sweet little Pippi is a shoe and sock pirate. So, and I get why she loves them, and I get why she targets the shoe she's targeting because she loves the people. But what do we do about that? We're taking our shoes off when we come in, and she's taking them. I personally have lost 3 pair of shoes in these 6 weeks. And I obviously don't want this happening to my staff. What can we do about this besides just hiding the shoes?
If you could clarify just a little bit, is she going after people's shoes and socks while they're wearing them? Or is this like once you're home and you've taken your shoes and socks off, or both?
Not when they're wearing them. Once we take them off, she goes for my shoes and socks. She'll go for staff come in, they take their shoes off. Then she's going for the shoes. You know, she's very surreptitious. She takes them, and then all of a sudden we're like, oh, no, a shoe is missing. Oh, no.
So number one is whenever we have a behavior, especially with a young dog, is making sure that they don't have the ability to rehearse the naughty behavior. I talk about this a lot with window barking. Dog perching on the back of the couch at the big bay window, and they bark, 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 bark. Nobody's giving this dog treats, but every time the dog barks, the mom with the stroller leaves and the UPS man leaves and the dog says, "Aunt, stay out." So nobody's giving rewards, but the dog is being rewarded. So we want to stop the rehearsal of behavior. So number one is figuring out a place where shoes and socks can be where she does not have access to them and being really diligent about that. The second part of this is doing some training. So making sure that there's plenty of things for her to put her mouth on. So making sure that wherever the shoes are, you have like little toys and stuffable toys, because like these young dogs are such little busybodies and they just want to just go in to get, you know, they're like, this is my brand. I like shoes and socks. So we want to make sure that there's other avenues where she can put her mouth on appropriately so that she has those options. Right now, the only option is the shoes and socks. So we want to make sure that there's like, you know, different types of chews and bones, mm-hmm. and some edible, some not. Stuffed Kongs, stuffed toys with like, you know, my go-to mixture is, you know, plain Greek yogurt, peanut butter, and pumpkin.
Oh!
I mix it all together, fill up the Kong, and then I freeze them. And then that gives her something appropriate to work on.
Greek yogurt, peanut butter, and...
canned pumpkin.
Frozen in a treat.
Some sort of like stuffable plastic rubber toy.
Man, you should have a cookbook for your dogs.
So when you leave her with the appropriate stuff to work on, it allows her to make better choices. Now, one of the things that I really remind people of, if let's say, you know, me, Lee, and you are sitting at your house, we kick off our shoes, and then here comes Pippi, right? She mm-hmm. walks past our shoes, she picks up an appropriate dog toy and lays in her dog bed. Nobody says anything. But if she was to pick up a shoe, she's getting chewed out.
Well, she's getting attention.
That too. But she's going to get in trouble. She's like, oh, man. I'm like, but we want to pay her for making good choices. We always want to teach what is yes and reward what is yes. And if you think about Pippi's brain, right? If we opened up her little head.
1 year old, been at the house for 6 weeks now.
And we look into her head, you'd see bookshelves. But instead of books on the bookshelves, there's piggy banks. And all the piggy banks have labels on them. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Sit down, stay calm, chew the shoes, eat the socks, you know, chew on the plants. All the behaviors are there. We have this luxury with our treat pouch to take treats and put them in the piggy banks that we want to hold value. So if you focus more on the yes and less on the no, the yeses will happen more.
I've seen a lot of dogs that are sort of shoe hounds, though, or have some sort of weird foot fetish. Does that go back to their scent in some way? Because we've got stinky feet?
Not stinky feet. It's our smell.
Oh.
This is my human.
But it also gets attention, too. When you grab that shoe, all of a sudden you're
chased.
In a game.
I get chased.
You get to play a game.
It's like those old, like, the 30s, like, spy movies where it's like, I have the microfilm.
Yeah. I'm off.
Come
and get me if you can. And then you have to because... Yep. Shoes aren't cheap.
Nope, they're not.
Oh, Corey, I wish you the best. And I good luck with that shoe thief. There are plenty of shoe thieves out there, and perhaps all they need is a good alternative and some reward for making the right choices. And, you know, I guess rewards for getting the attention for the right behavior.
Yep.
But you don't want to ignore a shoe thief after they make off with your $80 sneakers.
No, and you know, sometimes with certain dogs, I'll just reward a retrieve. So it's almost like a Turkish bazaar where the dog steals the shoe and I just walk over and I take the shoe and I give him a treat.
Oh.
Then they start bringing you the shoes instead of going into a corner and chewing on them.
Oh, because I'm dropping this off. I'm here to pick up.
You left this over there.
Yeah. Here's a tip.
Thanks.
Thanks, delivery guy.
Keep the change.
Corey, good luck with your baby, and thank you so much for rescuing. I appreciate that. Let's go to Carly and Kiwani next. Hi, Carly.
Hi.
What do you have for us today?
So we rescued they thought she was a Beagle Dachshund mix. Last June, I saw her litter mate's DNA tests on Facebook, and they said she's like 30% Chihuahua, but she does look a lot Beagle. She's about 19 pounds. And when we take her for a walk, I have two small kids. We have her on a harness, and she pulls so hard that sometimes her front feet are floating, and she's just back legs. And we thought maybe it's because my older is far ahead on a scooter and she needs to be following her faster to protect her. But then I'd go with just one in a stroller and she's still pulling. We do a retractable leash. We have a regular thick 6-foot leash. I will try to just stop her calmly when she pulls and pet her. And there she just wants to go. And then she gets so tired and she's panting and, you know, I've had suggestions about getting like a clip in the front so so that when she pulls, she turns and she doesn't want to do that, or get a harness. I just don't know what I should try first to try to get her to slow down so she can enjoy a walk.
Yeah, you know, loose leash walking can be a burden to train because, you know, the way I look at it is, you know, when we grab our dog's leash to go for a walk, the dog's like, yeah, we're going for a walk. Mm-hmm. This is, but I got to go walk with this glacier. You know, we walk so slowly.
Ouch.
And they're designed to run and go quickly. So going back to treats. So teaching what is yes. We were just talking about this where what's your dog's name?
Missy.
So what I would start off with, and adding the kids and the stroller might be a little too much in the beginning. Like I said on a previous caller, we want to start training in a sterile environment, like your living room. She's a little dog, so you can practice in like a wider space in your home. And what I do is I just have my dog following me. So I have some treats, and this is done off leash, right? So you just have your dog in the house, and when they start following you, you have some treats in your hand, and when they're walking next to you, as you walk around the kitchen island, you walk around the couch, you just start feeding her next to you. Right? We want to teach the yes behavior, and that's you're teaching her location. So imagine if I told you there's two ATMs, and one of them was broken and spitting out 20s, and the other one was not spitting out 20s.
I'm there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? So you're teaching her where the reinforcement zone is happening.
Which is right around
right
you.
Next to you.
Yeah, okay.
At your pace.
Uh-huh.
So in the beginning, it's just feeding her pretty steadily as you're walking down, you know, walking around your house. Then you start to walk further without paying. Now, the one thing, the glue between the treats is your verbal praise. And the verbal praise doesn't need to be her name or walk nicely. Just talk about what's happening. Who's my pretty little girl? You're walking so nicely.
Right? Some sweet nothings.
Some sweet nothings. So you're walking around the house, and then you start stretching out the delivery of your treat.
Okay.
So you're happy talking. That's keeping her next to you in hopes that the treat's coming soon. And then when you pay, you just paid for duration of how long she was next to you.
Hmm.
And then you stretch it out more and more and more. Now, when you go outside, you start at square one because you have the whole world in front of you. You got all the, you know, like I said before, they're sniffing for pee mail. They're reading the paper. They're sniffing, and there's rabbit pee and all the different types of delicious smells out there. So she has, there's much more distraction. So working slowly, I like working in parking lots for leash walking because it's pretty like asphalt, parking blocks, and that's it.
Yeah.
And there's gonna be less smells in the vicinity, and you just practice just walking around and walking around and walking around, and then feeding
the same
her.
Way you did around your house.
Correct.
With sweet nothings and
yep.
treats.
And then you just, and I would get her off the retractable. I do love what you said about getting the front clip harness.
Oh.
Some pet stores will allow you to bring your dog to the pet store where you can try the harnesses on so you're getting a good fit. And if the employees at the pet store are good at what they do, they'll be able to fit her nicely for a harness. There's a few on the market, but the hard part about front clip harnesses is that there's a lot of different body shapes of dogs. So if you have a Doxy Beagle, you said, you know, their body shape might be a little different. So finding the right fit might be you might have to try on a couple different harnesses, but make sure it's a front clip, no pull harness, and be careful too. Beagles and Doxies will have like less hair under their armpits,
oh.
So there can be some chafing issues that happen. It happens a lot with Pitties. They have no hair there to protect them. So some harnesses come with like an extra padded velvety underarm strap that prevents the chafing.
I had that happen to my sister's dog. Did not have a lot of hair under there, and we got the harness, and it was worse for a while.
Yeah,
until we got a better fitting harness.
Yeah, before they came out with like the softer belt chest strap, I would just get moleskin that you put in your shoe and just get a big piece and just wrap it around and tape it.
All right, Carly, so for Missy, it's some sweet nothings and lots of treats. It starts around the house. It moves to maybe a parking lot. And when you think you're ready, you take her on that great Snafari and make sure she stays close.
You like Snafari.
I like it better than the other one you dropped. But I'm thinking about the Beagle Dachshund Chihuahua mix. That is quite a mix.
Right. It's a nose with paws.
Cassandra called to ask if dopamine anchoring motivates people, if it motivates people, does it work on pets too? Do you know?
You know, it really depends. I would say yes.
Yeah.
But it really depends on the dog and again what other training they've had previously. Like I feel like dopamine anchoring would have to be done to you have to train for that a little bit because you want to make sure that they understand like the process, because sort of like us, like having a checklist and checking things off, that's how we get our dopamine when we're flipping through our phone.
Feel good.
Right. So once they understand the process of the games, the dopamine happens on its own.
Oh, and that makes a lot of sense. And I feel like we've talked about nothing but games this hour for your dog. And how can that be a bad thing?
Right.
George Millar, I love the way you see the world, or maybe sniff the world in dog's case. And I want to invite you back here because you do a lot of good for our very best friends.
Oh, I love being here.
It's a pleasure. George Millar is a professional dog trainer and the owner of Divine Canine in Madison. And I think it was Kay that will follow up with you down the road and off the air. Our conversation about dogs continues next hour. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News.